Coming up on this episode.
So he was sort of like the setting sun of the British Empire in Georgia.
The fighting in Georgia and South Carolina is the bloodiest and nastiest in the American Revolution.
The fathers tended to support the crown and the sons tended to support revolution.
This podcast from Georgia Public Broadcasting highlights books with Georgia connections, hosted by your two favorite public radio book nerds who also happen to be your hosts of All Things Considered on GPB Radio. I'm Peter Biello.
And I'm Orlando Montoya. Thanks for joining us as we introduce you to authors, their writings, and the insights behind their stories, mixed with our own ideas and thoughts about just what gives these works the narrative edge. All right, Peter, do you have any plans for America 250?
Nothing firm. I think the Braves have a home game on that Saturday night. Might try to see some baseball. Nothing more American than that, really, right?
Well, you should know. I'm going on vacation for a few days.
I do know because I'm covering for you the day before.
That's right. So, but, you know, 4th of July, I'm going to spend it with a capital 4th on PBS like I always do. Maybe catch up on that Ken Burns American Revolution stuff.
Okay. That's 12 hours of catching up.
No, just a few hours.
Well, would you call yourself patriotic?
I suppose, you know, 4th of July, like Christmas to me is like more about the music and the food than it is really about, you know, the message. I appreciate the message and the stories and everything. But for me, just give me a cheeseburger and a Sousa march and I'll be happy.
Okay. Okay.
But, you know, when I was a child, though, I remember it was a middle school show. It had to be when I was in 7th or 8th grade, I had PE, first period, so I didn't get to pledge allegiance because we were out in the gym. I missed all the morning announcements, so I didn't get the pledge of allegiance. So I remember I would go after lunch into Mrs. Baker's 5th grade class, or 5th period class, and say the pledge to myself.
Really? You went out of your way to say the Pledge of Allegiance?
Just me and Mrs. Baker in that room, me making the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag.
You and Mrs. Baker. Wow, what a memory.
Well, the reason we're talking about all this patriotism is because the book today is specifically about the American Revolution in Georgia. It's called From Empire to Revolution, Sir James Wright and the Price of Loyalty in Georgia.
So we're talking about a loyalist today?
How would
Mrs. Baker feel about that?
Maybe she'd be proud of me for talking about the American Revolution and being on the radio.
I don't know her, but yeah, probably. She'd probably be happy about that.
Well, James Wright was a British royal governor in Georgia during the time of the American Revolution. So this was the guy that the Liberty Boys wanted to get rid of, and they did. So he was sort of like the setting sun of the British Empire in Georgia. But I really think his story is an American story too. And the author, Greg Booking, in this book sort of makes the point here that it wasn't the British versus the Americans. You know, how many times do we say that?
Well, that's an interesting argument to make, that it wasn't, again, British versus the Americans.
These people were British. Everybody in Georgia at that time was both Georgian and British. So this was a civil war, and it was not, again, the British versus the Americans. It was, who were you loyal to? Were you loyal to the crown, or were you loyal to these hotheads? And they were hotheads, the revolutionaries, who wanted to overthrow the government.
So you mentioned Ken Burns.
Yes,
right?
Love him.
I spoke to him about his series about the American Revolution about a year ago before it came out, and he talked about some aspect of that, how it was to some extent a bloody civil war. Sounds like your author's kind of making the same point there.
Exactly. And just like Ken Burns' series is very vivid, very close up, very personable, in terms of the action during the war, this book also does that. Puts you in the action, puts you in the minds of the people of the time. And I remember Georgia was the youngest colony of the 13 at the time of the American Revolution. Georgia was only about 40 years old. So the people here had closer ties to the mother country, also closer ties to the Caribbean through trade, which was the British colonies there. So the fathers tended to support the crown and the sons tended to support revolution. That's very different than, say, up in Massachusetts. But so the Civil War here was very intense.
You mentioned background, so let's talk a little bit about James Wright's background. Was he born in Georgia?
No, but he came to Georgia with what you might call a servant's background. He was born into this duty-bound class of aristocrats with noblesse oblige, where he felt an obligation to do the best he could for those above him, namely the king, and those below him, the Georgians, his subjects. Here's the author, Greg Booking.
He was ideally suited to be a colonial governor. He was born in England to a family of some renown. His grandfather was King James II's Chief Justice. His father brought the family to Charleston initially, where his father was the Royal Chief Justice of South Carolina. So he had a foot in both camps. He had a foot in England and he had a foot here in America. From 1757 to 1760, just before he becomes governor of Georgia, he is serving South Carolina as their lobbyist in England. And so he's living in England for 3 years right before he becomes governor of Georgia. And he is working with lobbyists and ministers. He meets the king. And so he has all of these connections and knowledge of how imperial government works.
He's a good functionary.
Good functionary and a true servant of the crown.
So royal functionary, not necessarily an accolade in this case, right?
If you don't want to call it an accolade, I will say it was an accolade. He was a good governor for the people that he served. And again, for the people that he served. That's the point that Greg Booking is trying to make here. He served the king and he served the colonists. Things running smoothly is what you want if you're, you know, a British colonist, you know, thousands of miles across an ocean, in a far-flung outpost. You've got the Spanish in Florida to the south. You have the indigenous people whose land you're trying to steal. And he was good on all those fronts.
Yeah, we should acknowledge that land taking because there were native peoples here, not just the people from England and their descendants.
Yeah, so we have, of course, the Trail of Tears, the Indian Removal Act, several generations later. But this is a time in the 1770s, 1760s, when colonists are expanding into Georgia. And the book talks about these accomplishments that Wright had as governor. And one of the accomplishments was concluding treaties by which the indigenous people ceded land to Georgians. And he also oversaw a massive expansion in trade in Georgia. And we should say as well that a lot of that trade was in human beings. The white population doubled during his time as governor. The black population tripled during his time as governor, and that was by sale of human beings. So he was good to the people in terms of what they wanted. So the white people here really had no reason to not like this guy, but then the tide shifts.
And he was very popular. He was the only governor of the 13 colonial colonies to successfully distribute stamps during the Stamp Act crisis in 1765. That cost him a good bit of capital to do so. By 1773, he has been baroneted by King George III. So he's become Sir James Wright for his services to Georgia. But then at the same time, the Boston Tea Party happens. And Britain's response to the Boston Tea Party was to drop the hammer on Massachusetts and Bostonians by issuing what came to be known as the Coercive or the Intolerable Acts. Those were so punitive that Georgians started to fear that if they can do that to Boston and Massachusetts, they can do it to Savannah and Georgia. And the tide shifts in Georgia, but all along the 13 colonies, the tide shifts as a result of the Coercive Acts.
The Coercive Acts. Can you remind us what those were?
So they were basically a series of punitive measures that were taken against the Boston colonies, revoking their charter, taking control of their ports, and quartering people in homes that was offensive.
Seems reasonable. Okay, so there's a worry then that this is going to happen in Georgia as well. Sounds like this guy's getting less popular because of what's happening on behalf of the crown, which he is affiliated with.
Basically, he's the symbol of what's going on in Boston And his house gets shot at. He had to escape from Savannah at night on a ship that was waiting for him in the area that we now call Bonaventure Cemetery. On the way home, he was wounded by shrapnel during a firefight off the coast of New England. And the book opens with just this dramatic scene when he's having dinner with he and the other Crown officials are having dinner in the government house in Savannah, which I believe was on St. James Square, now called Telfair Square. And he was at the government house having dinner, and his best friend's son, James Habersham Jr., marches in, puts his hand on James Wright's shoulder and says, "You are now my prisoner." So it's a dramatic scene.
Wow, that sounds awkwardly personal.
Well, that's how civil wars work, you know. People who are very close to you, people that you know, your friends, they become your enemies, and you become willing to do some very horrible things.
Aside from maybe New Jersey, the fighting in Georgia and South Carolina is the bloodiest and nastiest in the American Revolution. Georgians were calling the happenings in Georgia, especially outside of Savannah, as early as the summer of 1775. So, well before independence is declared, they're calling it a civil war. Georgia's representatives to the Continental Congress are writing and saying that there's a civil war in Georgia that's happening, and it is as bloody a civil war as you can imagine. You know, it's not just between, you know, families breaking up, father staying loyal to the crown, his rebellious sons, you know, joining the patriot movement, but between families. There is, you know, indiscriminate killing on both sides.
Okay, so we know that wars like this are typically about ideas, right? We can know generally what the American ideas were, the ones that people were fighting for. But what did James Wright believe?
Well, that's the most interesting thing about the book, in my opinion. He wanted, in many respects, he wanted the same things that the Liberty Boys wanted. He did not like the Stamp Act. He thought the Stamp Act was ill-conceived and was not a good idea. And later he urged Parliament to give the American colonies representation. Remember what the war was about? For the American side, no taxation without representation. And so James Wright was calling for representation in Parliament for the colonies on the eve of the American Revolution. He persuaded the Liberty Boys not to send delegates to the First Continental Congress. He told them, quote, "You may be advocates for liberty, but so am I, but in a constitutional and legal way." So if you ask, what did he believe in? Fundamentally, he believed in the rule of law. He didn't believe in getting what you want through violence, intimidation. He wrote, quote, "Where there is no law, there is no liberty." And so that makes me think, you know, what would I have done back then? What side would I have been on? Would I have been on the side of the lawless rebels or the crown and stability, you know? So I remember at the time, you don't know. You don't know.
So you don't feel like you know where you would have fallen?
I don't know. I mean, I don't like this. I think I would have taken a look at the first person tarred and feathered and said,
not for me.
That is wrong. I mean, it was people being intimidated basically just for their beliefs. Homes were being taken. I don't know. I can't say.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of why I asked the question earlier about class and whether or not those divisions of loyalty between families remained among class, because, you know, if people feel like generally speaking, they're doing very well, they're going to stick with the status quo. But if they're not, generally speaking, tides are going to turn and people will rise up against the powers that be. That's generally what I think. So, you know, how did I feel? How would have I felt back then? Maybe it would depend on my wallet.
Yeah, maybe it depended on where you were in society. If you could, if you had access to all of these rebel papers that were stirring up the pot, what kind of people you associated with. And, you know, that's not the kind of history we get in history class. What we get in history class is, you know, this side was right, this side was wrong. So I think this book opens us up a little bit.
I had never heard of loyalists growing up in high school, in the late 1980s. But they are now just now starting to get their due as not just necessarily worthy adversaries, if that's even the correct phrasing, but as Americans. You know, that demographically they fit into every category that, you know, patriotic Americans or rebels fit into. Some were wealthy, some were middle class, you know, so to speak. Some were lower class. They had all of the same occupations as the patriots, held. They just chose what was in their mind, stability and patriotism, right? It's just patriotism to their current country. They believed, in many cases, the same things that the patriots believed about the taxation and the legislation that was coming from Britain, but they didn't think that you could just rebel. They thought that you had to go through these legal, you know, measures. And sometimes legal measures aren't enough.
Yeah, especially if you don't have representation, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the whole problem.
Yeah.
Well, we know the legal measures didn't work for the patriots. They took up arms. Wright was arrested, then escaped. What happened to Wright after that?
Well, there's a lot to talk about. I mean, basically, this book is the story of the American Revolution in Georgia. So there's a lot to talk about. But as you may know, Savannah was recaptured by the British after Wright escaped. So Wright was able to come back and rule in Georgia for three more frustrating years before, again, the Crown's army finally left Savannah in 1782, never to return again. So as you may know, I did walking tours in Savannah for a long time, and always used to point out that, you know, at the time of the surrender of Yorktown, Georgia was still under the control of the British. And eventually the British left, and Wright went back to England, and he ended up being the man who oversaw the Loyalist Claims Commission. So he was the person in London who was doling out money to all of the Loyalists who claimed that they lost money or lost property because of the war. And then he died a few years later. He was awarded £33,000 in damages himself, and Google tells me that's $11 million, and wow. Another source tells me that $6 million in today's money.
Even $6 million is a lot.
So, yeah, he had to be compensated. He was compensated for all of those people that were stolen from Africa that he owned. In any case, he died in 1786. He's buried in Westminster.
So what gives this book the narrative edge?
So, as I said, if you want to learn about the American Revolution in Georgia, go get yourself to Savannah. There's a lot of great places to see in Savannah. A little talky about that, but you can also get this book. I mean, this book is well told, expertly presented in context, very vivid in terms of the action, helping you to understand what was going through people's minds, and just like the blow by blow, the week by week, month by month, year by year context in which the empire was overthrown in Georgia. And again, it gets you thinking, you know, who were these loyalists? Why didn't I hear about them? They weren't monsters. They were just other Americans who decided to take another stand. So I'm happy I'm happy the Patriots ushered them out.
Yeah, be clear about that.
Because
the outcome was the right outcome.
I like my freedom, you know, and my 4th of July and my cheeseburgers and my potato salad and my Capitol 4th and all the music that we're going to experience here at America 250. But yeah, the book is really eye-opening and vivid. I'll recommend it, From Empire to Revolution.
Well, I'm curious to know what Mrs. Baker might think about all this.
Yeah, I was a patriotic little kid.
Yeah. Well, this book is called From Empire to Revolution, Sir James Wright and the Price of Loyalty in Georgia by Greg Booking. Orlando, thanks for telling me about it.
Thank you.
Happy Fourth.
Thank you. Happy Fourth.
Each story you hear on Planet Money starts with a question. What happens if we refund tariffs? Why are groceries so expensive? At NPR, we stand for your right to be curious, because the forces shaping our world can be hard to see. Follow NPR's Planet Money wherever you get your podcasts and start seeing how the economy really works.